So, some of you may have heard the story about the man who went out fishing and sat in his boat all day long in the hot sun and caught not one fish. So finally he decided to give it up and go home. On the way, he stopped at the local fish market. And he went in and he said to the man behind the counter, "Give me 4 of your biggest trout and throw them at me, will you please?" And the man behind the counter said, "Throw them at you? Why would I do that?" And the fisherman said, "Well, I want to be able to tell my wife in all honesty that I caught them." But then the man behind the counter said, "Well, in that case, I suggest you take the salmon. Because when your wife came by this afternoon, she told me she's tired of trout and she prefers that I sell you the salmon." That's dedicated to all the fisher persons in the room, right? So, today we actually are going to discuss another unsuccessful fishing story, and it takes place at the Sea of Galilee right after the resurrection. And it is really the second time in the scriptures that Jesus appears to his disciples. And if you remember, the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias, is a not a sea at all, really, but it's a freshwater lake in the middle of Israel. You can see the picture here of just the little freshwater blue. That's the Sea of Galilee. This is a very important place because it is where Jesus spent most of his ministry. And actually, at one time, the Sea of Galilee supplied the water for the entire country of Israel. Now, about 10% of the water is still supplied by the Sea of Galilee. So our story begins in that setting, in John 21, and we begin reading in verse 1. After these things, and that means these things that occurred in Jerusalem, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there were Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana, and the sons of Zebedee, that would be James and John, and 2 other disciples, unnamed. We don't know who the other 2 were. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." And they said to him, "Well, we'll just go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. And guess what? No fishing stores around. No place to buy them, right? Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but his disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, do you?" And they said, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. John was the first to recognize Jesus, and he said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that, he put on some clothes, for he was naked. Now, actually, he was unclothed from the waist up, because that's how the Galilean fishermen always fished in the hot Mediterranean climate. So he put on his tunic and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the full net of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. So the disciples are actually in Galilee this day, per Jesus' instructions. This really is several times mentioned in the Bible, but we're just going to look at one. Matthew 28:10, Jesus says to them, actually to the women who were at the grave that we talked about last week, to the women at the tomb, he says, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." So they are in Galilee per Jesus' instructions, but why in the world does Peter decide to go fishing instead of wait for Jesus? Did the disciples actually need the food? Was he bored as day after day went by with no sign of Jesus? It would have been about a 3-day walk from Jerusalem to the Galilee area. Had Peter simply lost faith that Jesus was even coming, or was he simply tired of waiting? The Interpreter's Bible notes that the disciples might have been experiencing ridicule on the street because of the crucifixion of their master. And maybe they just need it to escape for a while. Or maybe as Peter watches the familiar scene of the boats going out, maybe nostalgia sets in and suddenly he just declares, "I'm going fishing." Peter is always the impulsive one. There's another possibility, however, that I think gives the story even deeper meaning. Certainly the death of Jesus had thrown the disciples into great chaos and confusion. Perhaps Peter is so discouraged and so unsure of the future and his role in it that in despair he turns back to his own old way of life, to what he had done before Jesus commissioned him to be fishers of men. And the other disciples, like lemmings, follow Peter right back into the sea, back to the familiar sounds and smells of being on the open water, in the moonlight, hoisting the sails, feeling the ropes in their hands, focusing on nothing but those fishing nets just floating in the sea. Now, while going fishing might have seemed like a good idea at the time to the disciples, it was absolutely contrary to what Jesus had told them a week ago during his first appearance to them. He clearly said to them, "As the Father has sent me, so I now send you." And I'm pretty sure that Jesus did not mean to send them back to fishing. Because, just think about it, what would that have meant to the cause of Christianity if they'd returned to their old jobs? It certainly would have changed the centuries past, would it not have? So, John's account tells us that they're out in the sea all night long, and they catch no fish. Now, here's the thing. Peter, James, and John were seasoned fishermen. They had grown up on the Sea of Galilee fishing from the time they were really just children. How is it possible that they could fish all night long and not catch a single fish, not even enough for breakfast? Maybe this is to show us that once we understand our true purpose, it just doesn't work to return to our own life, old life, even if it's a little tempting sometimes. So, exhausted and hungry, nets empty, hands empty, hearts empty, the disciples see a man standing on the shore, but they do not recognize him as Jesus. Now, we might wonder about that also. The text clearly said they were only 100 yards from shore. Maybe it was overcast or foggy, or maybe they were just too upset about their fishing failure, or too tired and hungry from their efforts to have thoughts of Jesus in their minds. But remember, we looked at Mary Magdalene's story last week, and she had not recognized Jesus in the garden either. Could the deeper meaning here be that the Christ is always present, but we're not always receptive? At any rate, Jesus addresses the disciples as children. He says to them, catch any fish? This reminds me of the old Dr. Phil question, "How's this fishing trip working out for you boys?" Not very well, not very well. And then Jesus, still unrecognized, tells them to cast on the right side of the boat. They do so, and the net is full of fish. Now, because the disciples so readily follow the advice of what they believe to be a stranger on the shore, maybe something deep inside of them recognizes their master even before they become fully cognizant of his identity. But the question of the day is, what is the significance of the right side of the boat? Biblical scholars say it is very clear that Jesus did not say the other side. He specifically said the right side. And here's the interesting thing. Galilean fishermen always fished from the left side of the boat. It was all they knew. Their fathers and their fathers' fathers would have fished from the left side, and the boats even were equipped only to fish from the left side. So, maybe Jesus is telling all of us that when we turn away from what the world expects us to do and turn instead within to follow the guidance of the indwelling Christ, it is then that unimaginable blessings flow. UNI co-founder Charles Fillmore tells us that the boat represents a state of consciousness, and the right side represents the side of truth, truth with a capital T. Jesus is reminding the disciples and us to turn our awareness away from outer appearances of lack, away from old ingrained habits and thinking that don't really serve us, to the oneness of our indwelling Christ, where we always find a greater truth. The right side is the side of spiritual understanding. We can work, stress, and strain in the dark night. Anybody do that? I do occasionally. I think we all do in our human skins. And we do that without spiritual understanding. And probably, you know what? We catch no fish, no prosperity, no peace, or we exhaust ourselves in the process, right? So we also have another choice. We can turn our pivotal souls away from appearances of lack and limitation, knowing that we are one in a power that is greater than anything that might be showing up in our lives. Metaphysically, the Sea of Tiberias represents spiritual insight, discernment, and good vision. Seeing rightly, as Eric Butterworth used to say. And fish represent ideas of increase. In this case, thoughts in a sea of infinite possibilities. One Bible scholar wrote that when Jesus asked his beloved disciples, "Children, have you caught any fish?" In effect, he was saying, "Children, have you caught any divine ideas?" Because when we turn to the Christ of our being, the right side, our nets overflow with divine ideas, and we have an infinite storehouse of love, wisdom, faith, and strength to navigate anything we're navigating in this outer world. And although John is the first to recognize Jesus, it is Peter, impetuous as always, who grabs his outer garments, wades to shore to meet Jesus, and the other disciples follow, dragging the boat through the shallow water with a huge haul of fish behind them. So, anybody ever wonder what is the significance of the number 153? Well, I wish I could give you a definitive answer, but honestly, I think the original meaning has been lost through the ages. However, that doesn't keep metaphysicians and mathematicians alike from trying to explain it. There are hundreds of explanations on the internet. If you're interested, Google a few. That's interesting reading. My favorite one is from E.B. Bullinger. I love this. And he says 153, he looks at the three separate digits, and one is symbolic of God, unity, uniqueness, and beginning. Five represents grace and divine favor, which we know we always have. And the three is symbolic of completion, solid, real, and substantial. So that's the explanation that I like. You can choose yours among many. Some of them are a little more mathematical than that. So the point is, when the disciples arrive, there's Jesus cooking their breakfast of bread and fish over a charcoal fire. Ready to feed their human hunger, just as he has so many times fed their hearts and souls. Now, that fire is really significant because there are only two places in the whole Bible where a charcoal fire is mentioned, and the first one was when Peter sat around a charcoal fire and denied Jesus. So surely, when he sees this fire, it triggers feelings of pain and guilt within him. For this fishing story really is, in the end, about Peter, the first disciple called. Peter represents the power of faith, a necessary foundation for building spiritual consciousness. The writer of Hebrews defines faith as, what you see on the screen, the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. It is the faith that gives us that spiritual vision to look past appearances of lack, to perceive and believe in divine ideas, even when we see no evidence in the outer. And most of us, if we're honest, like Peter, need a little time to develop. First of all, to discover that faith, and then to develop it, and finally to allow it to express. And so our story continues as Jesus singles Peter out for a private session. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus says to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time, Jesus says to Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And this time, Peter responded, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And then Jesus said, "Then tend my sheep." Finally, he said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he had had to say it three times. And Peter said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus says to him, "Then feed my sheep." And before the conversation is over, Jesus says to him, "Peter, follow me. Follow me." So Jesus asked Peter, not once, not twice, but how many times? Three times, a deep and profound question. And the question is, do you love me? The Amplified Bible says, notes, "Do you love me with reasoning, intention, and spiritual devotion?" What we sometimes call that agape love. Actually, the first question is not just, "Do you love me?" but it's, "Do you love me more than these?" Right? I picture Jesus pointing to the fish and saying, "Peter, do you love me more than these fish? Do you love me more than your human needs? Do you love me more than your possessions and your old way of life? Do you love me enough to turn to me before you turn to anything in the outer?" And Peter responds three times, telling Jesus he does love him. And Jesus says to him, "Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, and feed my sheep." In other words, service and love are interconnected. The compelling question, repeated three times, reminds us, as it must have reminded Peter, of his denials. Yet, that question coming from Jesus does not sound punitive. Jesus is not seeking retribution. Jesus addresses Peter by the name he used the first time he called him by the same Sea of Galilee, Simon, son of John. As if Jesus were bringing Peter back to the beginning, erasing his times of faltered faith. Reverend Ed Townley says, in this moment, Jesus is giving Peter the chance to dissolve all the negative energy of shame and regret that he might still be holding. Jesus is calling Peter and us, I believe, to a renewal, a chance to restore our faith, to approach life on that right side, aligned in the Christ of our being. Jesus' final lesson to Peter is that spiritual unfoldment is based on love, and the test of love is a willingness to serve. Faith without love will always falter, but faith established in love and service will be our sustaining power through every hour of need. So the past is over. Peter is ready to release it and turn to the future, to future infinite possibilities. And John's gospel ends shortly after this conversation. But in the end, this lesson is about choice. We can work long and hard in the darkness of human, only human understanding, exhausting and depleting ourselves, but catching no fish, catching no divine ideas. Or we can turn our pivotal souls to a greater reality always. In the face of every outer conflict, we can struggle with the problem, be it a diagnosis, a pitiful bank balance, a failing relationship. We can focus on that negative appearance, or we can cast our nets to the side of what is spiritually true. We can always turn to God, knowing that we are one with the Most High, and through the indwelling Christ, we have everything, every single thing we need. So, the next time you go fishing, whether it's for trout or salmon or for healing, prosperity, divine order, or harmony, ask yourself, am I casting my net on the right side? Am I following the Christ of my being to a life of power, truth, and goodness? And let's take a moment now to take those questions into our hearts as we turn within for our time of prayer and meditation. And for those of you who are here for the first time, this affirmation is printed in your bulletin, and it is, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.